Okay, so the discourse today is going to be Sutta number 142 in the Majjhima Nikaya, the exposition of offerings. This is real interesting sutta because it lets you know how you make merit by giving and how much you make by giving to different beings and such. Thus, if I heard on one occasion the Blessed One was living in the Sakyan country of Kapilavastu in Nigrodha's park, then Mahapajapati Gotami took a new pair of clothes and went to the Blessed One. After paying homage to him, she sat down at one side and said to the Blessed One, "Venerable Sir, this new pair of clothes has been spun by me, woven by me, especially for the Blessed One. Venerable Sir, let the Blessed One accept it from me out of compassion." When this was said, the Blessed One told her, "Give it to the Sangha, Gotami. When you give it to the Sangha, the offering will be made both to me and to the Sangha." And that's what I try to focus everybody who is giving anything. Don't make it a personal gift to me. Make it a gift to the entire Sangha. And the reason is you make so much more merit, and it will come back to you in all kinds of wonderful ways. A second time and a third time, she said to the Blessed One, "Venerable Sir, accept it from me out of compassion." A second and third time, the Blessed One told her, "Give it to the Sangha, Gotami. When you give it to the Sangha, the offerings will be made both to me and to the Sangha." So, gifts to individual monks. Please, I want you to have this. You make merit, but you make very little merit. And merit is good actions, positive actions. So anytime you give anything to me personally in your mind, you say that you are giving this to the entire Sangha. The entire Sangha takes care of me. So the gift might come to me, it might come to another monk, it doesn't really matter. We share everything equally. Then the Venerable Ananda said to the Blessed One, "Venerable Sir, let the Blessed One accept a new pair of clothes from Mahapajapati Gotami. Mahapajapati Gotami has been a very helpful to the Blessed One, Sir. As his mother's sister, she was his nurse, his foster mother, the one who gave him milk. She suckled the Blessed One when his own mother died. The Blessed One said, too, has been very helpful to the Mahapajapati Gotami. It is owing to the Blessed One that the Mahapajapati Gotami has gone for refuge to the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. it is owing to the Blessed One that that Venerable Mahapajapati Gotami abstains from killing living beings. Can you hear me better now? Okay. She abstains from killing living beings. She abstains from taking what is not given. She abstains from sexual misconduct. She abstains from false speech. And this says wine and liquor and intoxicants. But there are so many drugs out these days, we have to include those two as part of the intoxicant, which are the basis of negligence. It is owing to the Blessed One that the Mahapajapati Gotami possesses perfect confidence in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, and that she possesses the virtues loved by the noble ones. It is owing to the Blessed One that Mahapajapati Gotami is free from a doubt about suffering, about the origin of suffering, about the cessation of suffering, about the way leading to the cessation of suffering. The Blessed One has been very helpful to Mahapajapati Gotami. Now, actually, Ananda saying this, said this out of his own confidence in the Buddha's foster mother. But he spoke out of turn, and he was kind of contradicting the Buddha by saying these things. He was trying to make him feel guilty that he should personally accept this instead of having it go to the entire Sangha. So the Buddha is going to give him his answer. That is so, Ananda, that is so. When one person, owing to another, has gone forth for refuge to the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, I say that is not easy for the former to repay the latter by paying homage to him, raising up for him according to the reverential salutations and polite services, and by providing robes, alms, food, resting place, and medicinal requisites. When one person, owing to another, has come to abstain from killing living beings, from taking what is not given, from misconduct and sensual pleasures, from false speech, from wine, liquor, and intoxicants, which are the basis of negligence, I say that is not easy for the former to repay the latter by taking homage to him and all of the other things. When one person, owing to another, has come to possess perfect confidence in the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, and to possess the virtues loved by the noble ones, I say that it is not easy for the former to repay the latter by paying homage to him. When one person, owing to another, has become free from doubt about suffering. So he's really doing right now is making kind of a list. You make a lot of merit by taking refuge in the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. You make even more merit by keeping the five precepts without breaking them. and giving to the people that encouraged you to act that way and sharing the merit with them is very, very good. But there are other ways of making merit too, and you'll see that in a moment. There are 14 kinds of personal offerings. One gives a gift to the Tathagata, accomplished and fully awakened. This is the first kind of personal offering. One gives a gift to a Pacheka Buddha. This is the second kind of personal offering. One gives a gift to an Arahat disciple of the Tathagata. This is the third kind of personal offering. One gives a gift to one who has entered upon the way to the realization of the fruit of arahatship. This is the fourth kind of personal offering. One gives a gift to a non-returner. Now, this doesn't mean only somebody that has taken the robes. This is giving a gift to any non-returner. They are a part of the noble Sangha. This is the fifth kind of personal offering. One gives a gift to one who has entered upon the way to the realization of the fruit of non-return. This is the sixth way of personal offering. One gives a gift to a once returner. This is the seventh kind of personal offering. One gives a gift to one who has entered upon the way to the realization of the fruit of once return. This is the eighth kind of personal offering. One gives a gift to a stream enterer. This is the ninth kind of personal offering. One gives a gift to one who has entered upon the way to the realization of the fruit of stream entry. This is the tenth kind of personal offering. One gives a gift to one outside the dispensation who is free from lust for sensual pleasures. This is the 11th kind of personal offering. This is someone that is abstinent. So you can make merit by giving laymen that are abstinent, that you can make good merit for doing that. One gives a gift to a virtuous ordinary person, somebody that keeps the precepts. This is the 12th kind of personal offering, one who gives a gift to an immoral ordinary person. This is the 13th kind of personal offering. One gives a gift to an animal. This is the 14th kind of personal offering. Herein, Ananda, by giving a gift to an animal, the offering may be expected to repay 100-fold. In other words, you give an animal something to eat, it'll come back to you 100 times when the karma is ripe. By giving a gift to an immoral, ordinary person, the offering may be expected to repay 1,000-fold. By giving a gift to a virtuous ordinary person, the offering may be expected to repay 100,000-fold. So the more virtuous the person is that you give the gift to, the more merit you make, the more times that good gift will come back to you. Now, you being in the West, or being in a good circumstance in your life, that says that in the past, you practiced your generosity. And you're eating the fruit of that. By giving a gift to one outside the dispensation, who is free from lust for sensual pleasures, the offering may expected to be repaid 100,000 times. By giving a gift to one who has entered the way to the realization of the fruit of stream entry, the offering may be expected to repay incalculable. Lee. Immeasurably. What then should be said about one giving a gift to a stream enterer? So, giving a gift to people that are keeping their precepts very well and pointing their mind towards being able to experience Nibbana, the amount of merit that you make comes back very, very big. Now, the thing with generosity and giving is the Buddha talked about different ways of giving. And he said that when you prepare a gift, say you're preparing food for someone, while you're preparing the gift, don't let your mind think about nonsense stuff, about things that cause all kinds of problems, or try to solve some problem while you're fixing the food. Just have a happy mind when you are preparing the gift. While you give that gift, with a happy mind. Now, something about giving that has happened to me, as well as many other people, is you prepare a gift for someone else, you want to give that gift to them, you start giving it to them, and they say, I don't want that. That's like getting slapped in the face. It is your responsibility to accept the gift. Whatever you do with the gift after it is given, that's up to you. If you don't want what was given to you, give it to somebody else. Make them happy, but do that with a happy, uplifted mind. And then reflect on giving that gift when you go away from that person, when you've given that gift to them. Reflect on that with a happy mind. That's how you make the most amount of merit when you're giving a gift. One of the hardest things I had to learn as a monk was to accept what somebody wants to give me. Sometimes they give me things that I have no need of. I don't want to carry it around. It's like, sometimes I get whole sets of books that are given to me. Now, if I'm traveling, how am I going to carry that around with me? And that gets troublesome trying to send the gift back to when I come back to the States. But I have to accept it. And I have to accept it with a happy mind. I've been given, people tried to give me monasteries. I can't accept it, but I can accept it in the name of the Sangha. It's not a personal gift to me. And then I can look for a monk to take it. So there's all kinds of ways that we can accept the gift, but always understand out of compassion that the gift that is given with a happy mind, so you be happy and rejoice in their good qualities, in their want to give. And that way you encourage more and more people to give. You be the example for giving gifts to other people. So you get an idea that it's real important for you to understand that this is the first part of meditation. So many people want to learn how to meditate, but they don't understand that this is an active, very important part of letting go of things. Sometimes you can give something away to somebody else and it really means a lot to you. And then after you give it, you had, oh, I wish I hadn't given that away. If you entertain that kind of thought, you still get the good merit, but it's not quite like you would like it to be. An example in one of the Dhammapada commentaries. There was a girl, she was a princess, and she had her favorite kind of comb for her hair was, she was wearing that comb, and she saw a Pacheka Buddha walking around, and she was so inspired by him, she wanted to give that gold comb away, and so she did. But after she gave it away, she kept on having remorse for giving it away. And she kept on thinking, oh, I wish I would have kept it. The Pacheka Buddha didn't even have any hair, so what does he need a comb for? In her next lifetime, she was reborn with a very special gift. And that gift is, anytime a man touched her hand, they fell in love with her. That was the good merit of giving that comb. But she was also born very ugly. Now, what happened to her was that this girl had a reputation for being very ugly and not being very nice. But one day she saw the king and he touched her hand and he felt this electricity and he fell in love with her. And he made her into a queen. Now that's a good merit of the giving the gift. But she suffered because she had remorse for giving the gift and wished that she hadn't done it. So there you have the kind of merit that is a mixed bag. Now, what happened a little bit later on was the king was criticized very heavily for marrying a very ugly lady. And he set up a screen that had a hole in it that somebody could sit on one side, she would sit on the other. They would put their hand through and she would touch their hand and they would fall in love with her. So that's how the king let go of the bad press, as it were. So every gift you give, you get good merit for having given it. But if it's a favorite thing that really means a lot to you and it doesn't mean so much to somebody else, and you see that they don't keep that gift, but they give it to someone else, you should rejoice in that gift. Happy mind. Everything that the Buddha talked to us about is a happy mind. And the way things are going in the world today, there's an awful lot of people that would do better if they started practicing more of the generosity. One of the highest gifts that you can give is food. If you give food, that means in the future it will come back to you and you will not ever go hungry. I had a teacher by the name of Munindra. He was a very great teacher from India. And he came to the monastery that I was staying at. And he, every time we sat down to a meal, he was always taking something from his plate and putting it on somebody else's plate because he wanted to keep practicing that generosity. And we kept on saying, "Why are you putting that on my plate? I can take more if I want." Then he would give an explanation about the reasons that he gave. So I thought it was a great idea, so I started doing the same thing. And after he left, I kept that practice going with the people that were working at the center. Anytime I ran across a piece of fruit that was particularly good, then I would cut it up and walk around and give it to the people that I loved, that I wanted them to have something special. And one of my friends, he said, "I love to see you coming when you have fruit in your hand, because I know that I'm going to be getting really good, tasty fruit." He said, my mouth actually starts to salivate. So the more you can practice your generosity, the more times it comes back to you. But it depends on your mind at the giving time. When you prepare and you're just thinking about putting love and kindness into your preparation of the food, and you keep your mind on that, and then while you are giving that food, you're giving the food with a happy mind, And then you reflect on it later about how happy you felt when you were able to give. That will come back to you many, many times. And that will lead to a more and more uplifted mind. And that will actually help your meditation. Because this is a kind of meditation. So the more you can practice your generosity, the better your sitting will become. Of course, the second part of this is that keeping the precepts without breaking them. You might get tired of me talking about this over and over again, but it's so very important. And when Buddhism first came to this country, it wasn't stressed very much. And that's because of a religion that's in this country that they want you to feel guilty for doing something wrong. And they don't stress the importance of keeping the precepts. As a result, there's been a lot of people that are taking meditation. They're reciting the precepts one time at the beginning of the session of the retreat, but they never talk about it during the retreat. And that is a mistake. It has to be reinforced a lot. If you come to my center, which I encourage all of you to come and visit, if you come to my center, you'll find out that you take the precepts every day. You take the refuges every day. Why? It helps to settle your mind. One of the advantages of keeping the precepts without breaking them is your mind will tend to become peaceful and calm, very tranquil, very quickly, and your progress in meditation is faster than if you broke one of the precepts. Why, when you're sitting in meditation, does a hindrance arise? Why is your mind pulled away from your object of meditation? Because sometime in the past, it might be the close past, it might be the distance past. You broke a precept. Every time you break a precept, even something that you don't consider to be very bad, that's only a little white lie, and they know that I'm saying something that's not true. Every time you break a precept, it causes your mind to feel guilty. It causes remorse to arise in your mind. And that guilty feeling is the very beginning of the false belief in a personal self. I am that. I did that. I shouldn't have done that. And that's what the hindrances are that arise. Because in the past, you broke precepts. So the importance of keeping your precepts going, not only while you're sitting in meditation, can't be overstated. You might get tired of hearing this over and over and over again. But we need that reminder. That's why I have you take the precepts every day, not as some kind of rite and ritual, but as a reminder to keep your precepts without breaking them. One of the advantages of keeping your precepts very well is you know what you're going to do or you're going to say before you say it, or you do it, and you make the decision of whether you're going to suffer or not. These aren't commandments. You can do whatever you want. It's up to you. You are in charge of your own spiritual path. If you want to continue on having an uplifted mind, a happy mind, there are certain formulas that the Buddha gives that are very helpful. And when you follow those formulas, you see, yeah, it works. But you don't have to blindly believe anything. In Buddhism, there's only one thing that you have to believe. You'll get to see it as you go deeper in your meditation. The only thing you have to believe is that things happen one thing at a time. And you will see that in your meditation. When you're seeing, you're not hearing. When you're hearing, you're not seeing. These are individual consciousnesses arising and passing away very quickly. As you become more and more attuned to that, you will start to see on your own how you are responsible for the amount of suffering that you have. Can't blame somebody else for your suffering. That's one of the things that led me to Buddhism, because the self-responsibility. Oh, you said something bad to me and I didn't like it. Who didn't like it? I didn't like it. Who's fighting with the Dhamma? Who's fighting with the present moment? Who's looking for an excuse so they don't have to take responsibility for themselves? You see how this works. It's very important to understand. Practicing your generosity is the very beginning of what meditation is, of taking responsibility, of letting go of your greed. The more you practice your generosity, the happier you can become. And this helps you to attain Nibbana. That's the first part of this. And the second part is keeping your precepts without breaking them. It's pretty amazing when you start watching how, when you keep your precepts without breaking them, it turns into a protection for you. You'll be able to discern when you keep your precepts on your speech. You'll be able to discern when other people aren't keeping their precepts much more easily. And you'll hear in their voice whether it's what they're saying is true or not. As you keep your precepts without breaking them, you start running into more and more people that keep their precepts. And you start feeling really comfortable around them. You feel like, ah, here's somebody that I can trust. And life becomes easier. It becomes more and more fun to live. Oh, the first noble truth, life is suffering. That's not the first noble truth. there's suffering in life. Why? Why is that suffering there? Because in the past we broke some precepts. Now we have to learn how to purify our mind. And we do that through generosity. We do that through keeping the precepts. And we do that by purifying the mind, by practicing the six R's. The six R's are the fourth noble truth. This is the path leading to the cessation of suffering. Every time you practice the six R's, every time you let go of that attachment, you don't keep your attention on the attachment. That's one of the things that happens with people, is they start to forget. And then something, a bad feeling arises, and they don't like that bad feeling, so they start fighting with the bad feeling. And then they try to change the feeling with their thoughts and their words. Now, this is called bhava in Pali, but I call it your emotional habitual tendency. And the more you try to control it, the bigger, excuse me, the bigger and more intense that feeling becomes. And then you get into what is commonly called these days the dark night of the soul. What is that? Well, that's just another experience that you're taking personally and you're trying to control because you don't like it. And you make yourself more and more miserable. And the feeling gets more and more intense. And then you run for external sources to try to fix the problem that you're causing yourself. Now, I spend a lot of time when people come, if they need it, I spend a lot of time teaching them how to let go of the pain that they are causing themselves. And by doing that with forgiveness. Forgiveness is the most powerful meditation that I know. And a lot of people, especially these days, oh, you got to forgive this, you got to forgive that. Well, I forgive it. I still have that dislike of it. I still have that problem that caused it. But I convince myself that I forgive. Well, the way that I teach forgiveness is stay with the forgiveness until you feel relief and there is no more pain. By whatever caused that sadness, pain, fear, anxiety, whatever it happens to be. That's the power of forgiveness. When you are able to forgive, it opens up a whole new world for you, where you have a lot more in your heart for whatever situation you're going through. And you have more awareness of being able to send loving kindness while you're talking with other people. See, all of this stuff is interconnected. It all starts with forgiveness. It all starts with giving. And then keeping your precepts. Quite often, forgiveness. Forgiveness is feeling guilty about something you did in the past and causing yourself immeasurable amounts of pain. Now, it's not always that you cause the pain to yourself, but there is a memory of feeling guilty that you did something that caused somebody else harm, or somebody did something that caused you harm, and you didn't like it and you hate them for it. Now, you're walking around with this pain wrapped around your heart. And it kind of squeezes and causes people to think that they have heart attacks or heartburn. What is heartburn? Well, that's when there's acid in the stomach and la, 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 la. Heartburn is telling you that you have to forgive. You forgive the pain for being there. You forgive the reason for the cause of the pain. And you keep forgiving it until you actually, deep down, your mind says, I really sincerely forgive that. And you don't have any more pain. What happens in your heart right after that? Oh, it opens up. And you walk around smiling and happy. And it's you that heals yourself. Can't ask somebody else to heal you. Although that seems like that's what I've been doing a lot because my body is acting so weird. But I'm doing forgiveness right now, too. There might have been something in a past lifetime that's causing this kind of problem right now. I will get to it. I will find out what it is. And I will be able to forgive whatever the problem was. Sometimes it takes a long time. When you're doing the forgiveness meditation, I don't care if it takes 3 months or 6 months or a year on the same thing. It's your attachment to it, your identification with it, your dislike of it, your wanting it to change and be different than it is. And sometimes that attachment can be very strong. You have to be persistent. And you know when you've let go, when you finally do forgive. Because it's like somebody took 1,000-pound rock off of your shoulders and you feel like you can fly. Now, some people, they forgive partway. And they feel light and they say, oh, I've forgiven that. But it comes back later. And if it comes back later, guess who isn't done with it yet? You have to develop your patience. You have to develop a mind that says, I don't care how many times I have to make this statement. I sincerely, really do forgive. I let go of all that past pain that I've been holding on to. You still will have a memory of that past action, whatever it was, but there won't be any pain. Now, I've worked with women that have been raped. That is an incredibly difficult thing. And they feel justified in having that hate because they were violated so badly. But what good does holding on to that do? That's the real question. Does that make you feel better that you hold on to that hatred of that person that caused us so much pain? You can let go of the pain of that situation. And when you do that, that opens the door to Nibbana. Remember, Nibbana, it's a word that gets thrown around a lot. Nirvana. But it gets thrown around a lot. Ni means no, bana means fire. And what is that saying? Every time I say something about Nibbana, I'm saying let go of the craving. Well, do you have craving of some past action that happened to you? You must, because it keeps coming up over and over again. It tightens around your heart. It's like a steel band around your heart. So we need to truly understand the path of the Buddha is the path to Nibbana, to letting go of the fires. What's the cause of fire in the human being? I want. I don't want. I am that. The false belief in a personal self. Every time you use the six R's, you weaken that a tiny bit. And your mind becomes clear, your mind becomes bright. That's when I tell you, you need to smile and bring that uplifted, smiling mind that is pure, that has no more craving in it, back to your object of meditation. And if it's with your daily activities, your object of meditation very easily can be smiling. Now, I don't necessarily mean a big toothy grin. I mean smile. Smile in your mind. When you get angry, how does your mind feel? On fire. And I have been around the New Age ideas long enough to kind of laugh at the idea of I have to vent my anger, which is another excuse for throwing your anger to somebody else and let them get angry back at you for doing it. There's no such a thing as venting in Buddhism. There is only learning how to uplift your mind, to stop taking things personally so you feel like you have to vent, to let go of those ideas and relax and smile and come back to something wholesome, some wish for generosity. Now, there's a lot of different kinds of generosity. The Buddha here is just talking about physical things. But what else is, what other kinds of generosity do you have? At your fingertips, if you remember to use them. Oh, the generosity of saying something nice to somebody else. The generosity of helping other people overcome their suffering by practicing your giving of kind thoughts, kind words, and kind actions. the more you practice doing this with your daily activities, the more merit you make, the more people around you become agreeable and very likable. And in your own mind, you tend to have more uplifting thoughts, more kind thoughts, more generous thoughts. So the whole point of learning what the Buddha is teaching and learning about the meditation is that it takes practice, because we've had years and years of going the other way, holding on to your likes and dislikes, causing yourself immeasurable amounts of suffering. So much so you get used to it and think that's the way you're supposed to be. You don't give yourself the opportunity to change. And that's the whole point of the Buddha's teaching, change. So to follow the Buddha's path, you have to be sincere. You have to want to change. You have to work at forgiving yourself, because you beat yourself up all the time when you make a mistake. And you hold on to those things. That is unwholesome. The Buddha is teaching us more and more about things that cause mind to be wholesome, to be uplifted, to have advantage for you and the people around you, for you to be the example of someone that keeps the precepts and still has a very happy life. So it's important to keep your generosity going, not only for yourself, but for everybody else around you. Now, things are going to happen in life. There is suffering. It does happen. You don't have to fight with it. You don't have to get angry at it. The more you can use the six R's, the more that you can remember to be kind to yourself and other people and give that generosity away, the easier life becomes. So I've been talking for a long time. Does anybody have any question?
Oh. Hi, Bhante.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
I'm really grateful to have you back, first of all.
Thank you.
So I've
missed you guys too.
Yeah. So I have at least one question. The most burning question is, so I've come across situations in my life several times where, can you hear me all right?
Yeah.
Okay. Where, you know, someone asks me for money, and I have some concern or doubt about how they'll use it, you know, if it'll be for something good for them. I mean, is it, in those situations, is it just good to give regardless, or you know, how do you approach?
No, don't give blindly. Don't give blindly. Trust your intuition. Take some time before you decide whether you're going to give that or not, and quiet your mind down and ask yourself, is it the right thing for me to do right now? And when whatever answer comes, follow it. Sometimes the answer is going to be, no, that's not the, That's just somebody that's trying to take advantage of me, and they're not going to be doing good things with it. But other times it can happen that, yeah. And make your agreement with them very clear. Okay?
Okay.
Bhante. Hi, Bhante. Yeah. It is wonderful to see you.
Thank you.
I saw a lady at a really busy intersection, and she looked like really precarious, and she was very thin and frail, and it was a horrible sight, actually. And she had a sign, and I stopped, and I actually like stopped way up and then walked back. And anyway, you know, things aren't always as they appear, which is why I'm sharing this. But I said to her, she said, "I'm so hungry." And I said, "Well, I'm going to go and get you a sandwich." You know, she said, "Well, I really like Subway." And I said, "Okay." I think I said I'd go to this other place. And she said, no, I prefer Subway." And then I said, "Okay, what would you like?" And she said, "Well, I'd love a turkey sandwich." And I said, "Okay, great, a turkey sandwich." And she said, "Oh, and I need mustard and I need mayo. And if they've got that special French bread, I would love." And it's like, I felt like a waiter. I was just like, and I was just like, I think I probably was like the fifth person that day that stopped. Anyway, I went, I got her a sandwich, and I came back. And then, of course, I started to see her a lot. And I'm not saying she wasn't hungry. I'm just saying what my perception was that if I didn't stop, she might, something terrible would happen. And she was quite practiced at what she was doing.
Yeah, some people are like that. They have their preferences. So I don't judge them too much about that. What I wind up doing is just giving them what they need.
Yeah, I got her the sandwich and I gave it to her, and it was just, it was cute. And she was very sweet. And
yeah.
I like how you said you don't, you negate the gift as you're giving it. And I was aware that I could fall into a little cynicism, and I was very aware of that, and I didn't do that.
Good for you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
It always makes me happy when people tell me about how they gave. And sometimes giving is just simple words that help relieve pain. But the thing is that we have to remember to do it as much as we can, instead of having the judging mind that, I don't like this person, I don't like the feel of this person, or what they're talking about. You give them some words that make them happy, that make them smile. One of the things that used to happen to me, I don't go into stores very much anymore, but I used to go into some place like a Walmart that has stuff on a way high shelf, and I would see some woman that was about 5 feet tall trying to reach what was on the top shelf. So it always made me happy to grab a hold of it and give them what they want. And they would become so happy. I'm going to tell you a story about, I was traveling and I had to wash my clothes. So I went to a laundromat. And, you know, they have these little boxes of soap that are a dollar each, or they're more than that these days. At the time, they were a dollar. And I decided, I have so many clothes that I need to wash that I'm going to go to the grocery store and buy a box of soap. And it's about five times more than you pay for the same amount of soap. So I washed my clothes. I was getting ready to leave. I had this box of soap that I wasn't going to use anymore. I was traveling, so I'm not going to carry it with me. So I looked for somebody to give it to, and this lady came in with a big bunch of clothes. And I said, you know, I just bought this, and I used as much as I needed, but there's a lot left. I was wondering if I could give it to you. She said, well, I'll buy it from you. I said, no, I'm not going to carry it around. I'm going to throw it away. So please just accept it. So she did. And right as I was getting ready to leave, another lady walked in with a lot of clothes, and she gave the box to somebody else. That's what a gift can do for you. It can be spread because you were the inspiration of the giving.
Alice. Bante. Yeah, Bante. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, how are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
Great. We're supposed to meet in May, but it's going to be a long time. Another year, maybe, hopefully.
We'll see how it goes. You never can tell.
Okay. I have a question, and this happened very recently. And I learned that the gift of Dharma is the highest gift. So I've actually been a very ego student and always like to share my knowledge of the sutta and what I've learned from you during the retreat. And recently, I have a friend who was very keen to know more. And after I did the sharing and all that, I just recently been told off by the abbot of the center because they felt that they want to keep the teaching to the student to themselves. I felt so betrayed. I felt so angry. And it keep popping up during my meditation. So do I do forgiveness?
Absolutely.
But what to forgive?
Forgive them for not understanding.
Okay.
That's one of the real big ones. The reason that we get into different kinds of emotional upsets is because there's misunderstanding. Maybe just one person is misunderstanding, but probably it's both of you. You know, I make mistakes just like everybody else. I'm not going to be perfect. So I misunderstood what you were saying or what you did. And you have to be able to forgive yourself for not understanding.
Okay.
And forgive the other person for not understanding. And forgive them for not understanding you. And when you can do that, there's real relief. And your mind becomes light. Your heart becomes open. And after you get rid of the attachment to it, the dislike of the situation of that other person not understanding, after you let go of that, that other person will start changing. Okay, now when you think of them, you think of them in just in a tight, seeing things, but not seeing the whole problem. You're just seeing one little part of the problem. And then when you forgive, that opens it up and allows the space for that other person to change. We have a tendency to think, especially when we live with people, we have a tendency to think of them in one way. Oh, you're always this way. But when you forgive them, you stop forcing them to act in that way. And it opens up not only your heart, but it opens up their heart and gives them the space to change. Now, I use this example fairly often. There was a lady that came and started practicing meditation with me. And she had a very hard mind. And finally, she started talking about when she was 16, her father committed suicide. Now, she was from a rich family. And his brother, her uncle, stole the family fortune. And she had this amazing hatred towards him for about 30 years. So I told her to start forgiving. And I told her how to do it. And after a period of time, she actually did forgive him. Now, this was done at a retreat. When she went home from the retreat 2 days later, her uncle called her up and asked her to forgive him. That's pretty amazing. Because she stopped thinking about him in this hard, hard way and started accepting without any resentment in her mind, that gave him the space to call her up. And they've been talking with each other pretty regularly since. They actually get along. So that's the magic of practicing forgiveness.
Okay. Thank you, Max.
Okay, Al? You have a question? No? Okay. Anybody else?
Ante.
Yeah. Hi, Greg.
Hi. A little earlier in your talk today, you read out a scale of the amount of merit. Perhaps,
yeah.
For example, an animal was 100 times and an immoral person was 1,000 times, etc. So that scale seems fairly logical, but it didn't seem to take into account the need of the person receiving the gift. So I'm just wondering, when most people aren't in a position to be able to give to everybody, where do we stand when perhaps we could give a gift to a monk who doesn't really need it because he's currently well catered for, even though, of course, they don't own anything, but most monks can get by today with what they have. When you come across a person who is perhaps an immoral person, but they're desperately in need and they're currently suffering, but as I said, we can't help everyone. I would feel guilty if I gave to a monk when I knew there was someone who I could have helped and reduced their suffering a lot if I gave them the same gift that I'd given away. So I'm just wondering where you feel that. You didn't mention the need.
I know this question very well because everybody asked the same kind of a question. When you are practicing, you practice your generosity and your compassion, not looking for anything in return. Okay? So don't feel guilty about giving to somebody that's well off. Don't feel guilty about giving to the Sangha. But it comes back to you whether you like it or not. Okay, you're just not going to be making as much merit. That doesn't mean you don't give. And you don't give to somebody that's immoral. Somebody that, I've done that on occasion. I've known that the person was immoral, but I saw that their need was really there. And I gave. Okay, that just means that the amount of merit I got from giving to that person is not going to be as big, but I didn't give to get merit. I gave to help. But there are some people, say somebody like the Dalai Lama, you know that he affects a lot of people in a very positive way. And you get around him and all of a sudden you feel inspired to give. Don't just give to the Dalai Lama, give it to the entire Sangha. And that gift will come back to you in immeasurable ways for many, many lifetimes. Now, I was reading a book by Mahasi Sayadaw, and he was trying to measure up the amount of merit that you make for this or that. And it was mostly, he was talking about mental states. Giving a little, giving a lot, it doesn't really matter. It's the fact that you're giving. And he said, if you spend time, say a half an hour a day, radiating loving kindness to all beings, you make the equivalent of feeding everybody in the world food for one day. That's how important doing the mental development, practicing the loving kindness. So you really make a lot of merit by practicing all these different ways. I love to give food to animals. I don't do it because I want something in return. I do it because it makes me happy. Also, I just spent a long time in India. And I don't carry money around with me, but I ask other people to please give this person some money so they have some food. And I'm not doing it, whether they're moral or immoral, doesn't matter. They're a human being, and I'm giving out of my compassion so that they can have less suffering, at least for a little bit. And that's the way you have to look at it. It's not a tit-for-tat kind of thing. The whole point of the generosity is to let go of the greedy mind. Soften your mind.
Wonderful, thank you.
It makes giving a lot easier that way. Okay?
Thank you, wonderful.
Thank you.
Bhante, that beautiful line, I don't remember what sutta it's in, but you know, the incomparable field of merit for the world. It's like speaking of the monks, the sangha. It's like I love that. I've always loved that phrase. It's like I think of the people in the world who are pursuing the path, the Dharma, and I don't just mean Buddhists. I mean, all people who are swimming against the stream. And it's like when you do meet one of those people and you know it and you give, there is a field and it is palpable, and that field grows stronger. And I think that that helps me understand why the merit, there's something to me quite mysterious about merit. I have no doubt about it, but I don't really know how it works. And it's like I'm nourishing and cultivating and pouring my love and energy into that field.
Yes.
Making it stronger for the entire.
And every time you run across one of those kind of people, you have fun with them. They are really nice. I ran across a Muslim man. Now, a lot of times Muslims don't get along with Buddhists very well. They don't like, they think it's a lot different. But when we have a true practicing Muslim, they are wonderful people. And they go out of their way to be kind and generous and helpful. And it's like, I don't care whether you're wearing this little beanie thing on your head. It doesn't matter. I see you. I truly see you. And quite often, I want to give them something. I used to carry around some things just so I could give them away. And it's little useful things, you know, sometimes a little magnifying glass or some weird little thing like that. But it's a heartfelt gift. And it's fun. And it makes life fun the more you can practice your generosity. Especially to people that are on the path. I've run across some that they ask me a question. They say, well, do you think I'm on the right path? And yeah, you're on the right path. Continue. I'm not trying to convince you to become a Buddhist. I want to support you for doing good. That's where my religion is. Help other people overcome their suffering. Give to them in ways that help their mind to be uplifted too. It's amazing how close a friendship can be in 10 minutes when you're both on the same path. And it's great as long as it lasts. And then when they go away, you can think of them kindly. That's part of the generosity too. That's how we start affecting the world around us in positive ways. Anybody else have a question?
Okay. I know I've talked probably too much, but...
Oh, you're doing fine.
I just wanted to say thanks.
I appreciate you very much.
I just wanted to say, you know, Thanksgiving is coming up, and I just think about how different my life would be without the Dharma.
It's true.
And... I just am so grateful. And I know what David's thinking. David told me 5 years ago that I'm a bit of a teary one. And I am, David. I know. I do cry easily. But I just, of all of the things, the turkey, the all the great stuff, or whatever we're eating, it's the state of my heart and my mind. And I am so incredibly grateful for learning about the Buddhist teachings and then meeting you, Bhante. Thank you.
Thank you. How are you doing, Jeanette?
I'm doing great, thank you. I had a chat with David today and that was very helpful.
Good. Yeah. When are you gonna come visit me?
It's very soon.
Good.
Yes, as soon as...
By Thanksgiving?
Let's see. How about by 6 o'clock?
Come when you can.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. And that is to everybody. Come when you can. Now that I'm going to be staying here more than going out, you can extend the time that you stay. Okay? And we just had 2 inches of rain, so everything is good. Except it's brown here. All the leaves disappeared. Yeah.
Bhante, is it appropriate to ask a question about another sutta in this session?
Sure.
I think it's Anguttara Nikaya 9.12. It mentions about 9 kinds of, I don't know. I remember it has a part about 3 kinds of sotapanna in that discourse.
Yes.
Description about a sotapanna that can live up to maximum 7 lives by reborn between the human realm and the deva, the heavenly realm.
Right.
Another type is returning 2 or 3 times in a good family before liberated. Then another type is a 1-seat attainer when they only come back 1 time.
Right.
I thought Sakadagami come back 1 time, but here is a sotapanna. So I'm wondering, what's the difference between what practice makes the 3 levels different?
They're not different practices. They're just different depths of the same practice.
Different depth in meditation or
sometimes
the knowledge?
People can become a sotapanna just by listening.
Okay.
So they're going to, at the most, they're going to return 7 times at the most. But generally what happens is that they die from this realm, they're reborn into a Devaloka. And they learn enough and they practice enough that they will get off the wheel of samsara faster. They're not necessarily going to come back 7 times. They're not going to be reborn 7 times. They can be 1 time, 2 times, 3 times, depending on their merit and their practice. Coming back into another Buddhist family means that they were virtuous, they kept their precepts, they didn't do any mental development, and they didn't become a sotapanna in the same way. They are mundane sotapanna, not supramundane.
I'm sorry, I lost you there.
Well, a mundane means they will come back to the human realm and be reborn in a Buddhist family, and they will continue on with their practice. Now, the mundane, every time you use the 6 R's, you are experiencing Nibbana at that time. Why? Because you have let go of craving. You have to experience mundane Nibbana many, many, many times before you experience the super mundane. The super mundane is the experience of Nibbana in the highest spiritual sense. I got questions on this a lot when I was spending more times on the Yahoo groups talking to different Buddhist groups because they never heard of something like this.
Yeah. My question get a little bit crazier. I'm just wondering, like, since someone's going to reborn and then into a good family, for example, 2-3 times before they liberated. When that happens, do they then, you know, of course they have to take refuge in a Buddha again, but do they have to go through again the first level bliss and the second level and third level? What actually happened?
What you're asking is, it's going to be a complicated answer. Now, if it depends on them, what they're doing, what their experience is, and whether they have experienced the supramundane Nibbana or not. And it's going to be a long conversation. I don't think we have much time for that. I can talk to you about it, but come here and we'll talk. Okay. So why don't we share some merit? May suffering ones be suffering free, and the fear-struck fearless be. May the grieving shed all grief, and may all beings find relief. May all beings share this merit that we have thus acquired, for the acquisition of all kinds of happiness. May beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty powers, share this merit of ours. May they long protect the Buddha's dispensation. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you very much.
Have a happy holidays.
Thanks, you too.
Okay.
Bante.
Okay, I'll see you next week.
Terima kasih.